Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Reliability Gang podcast. Happy New Year, everyone. I hope everyone's had a great year. We're really excited to get back into this. Me and Will have been discussing that we didn't do enough podcasts last year. Now we're up in it now, guys. 2024, we want to get a podcast out a week. Here's the first one. And anyway, I've not actually said, how are you, Will?
I'm great. I'm buzzing for a new year.
I usually say, hi guys.
Yeah, hi everyone.
And I usually say, I'm with my right-hand man, Will.
Yeah.
And I completely missed that off. Maybe this is a new change.
I'm not important enough.
No, maybe I just talk too much as well. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, to be able to listen a little bit more rather than ramble on. So this is as well, we actually got a timer now, actually, and we actually got a bit of a schedule. Rather than going on for about an hour or so, and don't get me wrong, guys, I know you love the Reliability Gang for that. We have to keep to strict time schedules now, but we're still going to be able to talk about these things, but in a more in a structured way as well. So today we're going to talk about different maintenance practices and preventative maintenance and planned maintenance. And there's a lot of confusion within the industry, and we find this a lot when we're teaching maintenance practices in our Mobius course content. We have a lot of people getting confused about what certain terminology, certain terms are, and what do they actually mean. So we're here today to be able to go through some of them, try to be able to explain the difference of what they are, and as well try to be able to give you guys a little bit more of an understanding of how this actually can help you as a maintenance manager, operations manager, and actually how does this help you in terms of resource? How does this actually add value? Because definitely, all these terms are great, brilliant, but how, you know, there's lots of ways this can be converted to value, and we've got to be able to explain that as well. So I'm going to let Will start going through a few of the different maintenance practices. I'm going to let him lead this. He is very much the reliability ARP guy within the organization. He's really, I think you've, especially,
I find it
this,
very interesting.
You do have a little, I mean, we've all got a passion for it, but Will seems to have this, I don't know, photographic brain as well. I mean, even when we're talking about these things, he just seems about to hit the nail on the head. So I'm going to give this to Will as well to go through some different practices, and we can go from there.
And we'll bounce through a few of them together, sort of thing. So preventative maintenance is one of the topics we're going to talk more in depth about later, and is one of the maintenance practices. But maintenance strategy in general, there's a whole philosophy around deciding what maintenance strategy should be done.
Yeah.
The most common ones that we obviously deal with in a day in basis, which we'll start off with, condition based maintenance.
Yeah.
The most common one that we kind of deal with, because that covers all things around condition based maintenance, is looking at only doing maintenance on the asset or piece of equipment when there is a condition change that we feel needs to be done. So yes, we either might do vibration analysis and we see that our vibration data has increased to a point that is now not healthy, might have a bearing defect, then we decide we're going to do some form of maintenance.
Yeah, it's kind of the maintenance that is performed only when you kind of see a change in condition that warrants it.
Yeah. And we'd use different technologies to be able to let us know when we need to do that.
Yeah, because a lot of people, when we say condition monitoring, think, oh, it's just vibration analysis. No, it's not. Yeah. Condition monitoring is anything that you can measure the condition of something. So that could be temperature.
Pressure.
Could be, obviously, vibration.
And we use a lot of process data within condition-based maintenance strategies as well. So
of course, yeah. Like when you're measuring, like, you know, pressure on a fan, these indications when there's a pressure drop or something can indicate there's a problem with the maintenance or problem with the functions of one of their machines that requires maintenance from that.
Pressure on a fan's a great one that we can maybe look at a bit later when we develop into the next maintenance strategy, which now, in training, when we teach maintenance practices, the next one, which we call preventative maintenance, also called planned maintenance, also called scheduled maintenance. There's a few names for this one, but it's important that we differentiate what this actually means and doesn't get confused, because over here in the UK, and I assume in other countries as well, we also use the term quite regularly as PMs, or we've got some PMs to complete on site today. And PMs, it can get a bit confusing. But in terms of training of maintenance strategies, preventative maintenance, planned maintenance, we're actually looking at interventative maintenance. I think that's the word. Interventative maintenance.
I think you just made that word up.
I think
up.
I might have made it up. I'm thinking of a word and I can't think. But this type of maintenance, if we've got a motor on a piece of equipment and we've decided we're going to do some form of preventative maintenance. We're going to be essentially completely overhauling the motor at a set timed interval. Yeah.
A time interval or kind of run hours, or it's usually down to a set of some form of metrics, whether that's runtime, whether that's like calendar months.
And you'll sometimes hear it be called interval-based maintenance as well, which is where that interval part comes to. So what we say with preventative maintenance is that every year, every 12 months, that motor, we're going to replace it, or we're going to change the bearings. We don't care whether the bearings are good. We don't care about the condition. We're just going to change it.
Exactly. And this is another thing as well. When you have a lubrication schedule, where you say, right, I am going to lubricate that on run hours or as well time, that is a very similar concept. And this is where
the confusion happens.
Yeah, it does, because like even the evolution of condition-based lubrication now is a lot different to kind of planned lubrication scheduling.
Yeah.
And there's a big argument as well about what is the right way to do things. And do you know what? I think my viewpoints have changed a little bit moving forward as well, in terms of even condition-based lubrication as well.
Yeah.
And the thing is, man, it's really difficult to understand and know when the right practice needs to be used, but it all depends on the application. That's what we've got to look at anyway. So
we've got condition-based maintenance. Quick summary, we do it maintenance based on condition. Preventative maintenance or interval-based maintenance, we're going to change it regardless of the condition.
On a schedule or a time-based.
Then we look at proactive maintenance. So proactive maintenance is we're going to do some form of maintenance that's going to be proactive. So before there's an issue, so that might be lubrication.
It could be tightening down bolts on a motor make the asset run in a better condition that is essentially going to give life to that asset. Proactive maintenance tasks as well.
Cleaning the machine.
Cleaning
that's
it
proactive.
Down, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, the proactive maintenance tasks directly improve reliability of the machines. And I'd say 90% of the time, proactive maintenance is not done properly.
Not properly.
Or at all. You know, and that's the crazy thing. This is the issue that we're in, and usually it's not done because the reactivity of the plant, which brings us to reactive maintenance, usually is the thing that requires to be done on the plant most of the time because people are firefighting, which doesn't allow the time to be
doing
spent
the proactive
on the
tasks.
Proactive tasks. So just go over reactive maintenance as well.
So you've got two kind of things there. So reactive maintenance is the idea that we're just going to do nothing about it, and when it fails, we're going to react.
Or run to failure is another.
So run to failure is slightly, or that they get mixed and matched. So reactive maintenance is we're going to just do nothing and we're not going to plan about it, and when it fails, we're going to react to it. Run to fail, I like to separate it and say, if we're doing a run to fail, if someone said to me, Will, we're doing a run to fail maintenance on this asset, my interpretation of that is someone has done a Formica study on it and has decided based on evidence that we're going to run
to
fail.
That is okay for that asset to fail because it doesn't impact production.
If we're doing reactive, that's just, we're just going to run around. No one's actually decided if that's the best thing
to
do.
Well, to be honest, it's not even a strategy. It's just okay.
It's a state of being.
It's a horrible state of being of like, okay, we're just going to randomly just, react to whatever happens. And I don't think that's the best place to be in for any place or any plant. And this is what we're here to do. We're here to help people get out of that reactive maintenance cycle.
Exactly.
And it's not easy.
It's not.
The problem is a lot of people think, oh, we'll throw a bit of condition-based maintenance in there, sprinkle a little bit of that. It doesn't solve all your problems. No. This is why we evolved into maintain reliability, because I think we quickly realised when we were working with these places, well, we've got to change the way we're doing things if we are actually going to make a difference to reliability as well. So.
And the final one within maintenance practices is precision maintenance. So precision maintenance is around making sure that the fan is balanced, making sure that we laser align the shafts when we put a new asset in, or we've done previous maintenance. We're going to make sure those shafts are back in alignment. And all those things also improve the reliability
100%,
of the plant.
Yeah, there's a lot of that as well. That precision maintenance is massive for maintain, especially now now we've acquired a workshop, and we're kind of now integrating that into our processes. So thanks for that, Will. I think we've kind of covered
good
a lot
little
of the
recap
of all.
And all those strategies, fundamentally, there's a process that can be followed within a reliability plan to help you decide what strategy needs to be done.
Exactly. But what we're going to talk about a bit more in depth today is we're probably going to go over a few of these, actually. I think it's quite...
In other future
yeah,
episodes.
You know, I think there's a lot to talk about, as we can see. We're on the time schedule now, and we're talking a lot quicker than we usually
are. But like, on to the next one.
We got this, because we've actually got a schedule. But this is good because it keeps us on subject. But we're going to talk about preventive maintenance in a bit more detail and a bit more depth.
Yep.
And we're going to look at, you know, what is planned maintenance and the terminology used around PMs and preventive maintenance as well. And, you know, go into as well schedule maintenance on a plant and a bit more of a kind yep. of point of view as well.
So, as we've kind of discussed, preventative maintenance or interval-based maintenance is that idea that we're going to just change the asset regardless on condition. And this is where the bit of the confusion happens, because when you deal with most CMMS systems, we're talking about PMs, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of those PMs are scheduled-based maintenance tasks that are done every 6 months. We're going to do this, every 6 months we're going to do that, which we tend to call planned maintenance. Oh, there's, you know, you've got lots of planned maintenance tasks to be done. But those PMs could be one of any type of maintenance strategy.
Yes.
So you may have a PM that every 2 years, you're going to just change that motor regardless. That's a preventative maintenance strategy.
You could have a PM to do VA every month. That needs to be signed
exactly.
off. You know, so you're doing planned maintenance, but you're doing condition-based maintenance for a planned yep. maintenance way.
Right, exactly. And one of the big things that kind of falls under this that we're going to look at is... how do we look at all of our PMs, whether they're condition-based PMs, precision, proactive PMs, or whatever, and how do we look at optimizing those?
Yeah, how do we make them efficient? So when we're doing them, we're not just going off history. Because
yeah.
what we find in most plants where we go to, a lot of the PMs are still so ingrained in the history of the plant. So a lot of these things haven't been reviewed for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are scared to change them as well, because there's kind of almost like this, I don't want to say blame culture, but if anything happens to that asset, it's
who
almost like,
that PM?
Who did that? Who did this? And people will point the finger without even looking at the effectiveness of the PMs. But yeah. if it does fail and the PMs have been done, it seems to be, oh, don't worry.
Don't matter.
It did the PMs. There's nothing we could do. When the reality is, how effective was the PM?
Yep.
And could the PM actually be optimized to prevent the failure from happening anyway?
Yep.
So this is the thing that we're looking at now, and actually looking at, I mean, most plants we go to, this is the reality. I'd say 80% need to have this done properly.
Someone needs to be able to yeah. have a look through. And the thing is it does cost time, and it does cost money to do.
Yeah.
But the outcome is it saves time and it saves money.
But that's the thing. If we've got to start looking at the things in the future that are going to minimize our time.
Yep.
And even with us in our business, you know, we look at things in the future like how long does it take to do a certain process? Do we spend a bit of time of it now to save that efficiency forever?
Yep.
Like, it's a huge saving. And not even that, it directly can affect reliability if the right tasks are put in place, especially yep. the proactive ones as well. Because say, for example, you might, you know, say, well, we haven't got the time. But then if we reduce the MPMs and the ones that weren't effective, well, then you can take out them and put in proactive tasks that then prevent these things yeah. from happening in the
and
future as well.
Sometimes it's a case of the knowledge on site isn't quite there to, you know, have the confidence to make those decisions. But that is where you can have someone like ourselves or other partners come in and have that
yeah.
level of accountability. Because, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm pretty ruthless, but we don't have the same, like, we go in with the pure focus of, what is right?
Yeah.
Not about what people want. It's
the right way to save. And I think that's where you have to be a little bit ruthless, but you've got to do it in a way that is calculated and logical
structured. Because you need to yeah. be able to justify the decisions
100%.
Made. So when
I mean, the beautiful thing that what Will's done and what we've created at Maintain is a way that we define that structure, and we
yep.
can go through it by a process way that really will, from the end result, result in, is it supposed to be kept or can it be taken yep. out?
And it can be as simple as reviewing your planned maintenance or PMs and looking through and going, right, do these add value? Do actions come off the back of these? If they don't, and so if we've got... just check this, check that, check this. And then we say, well, what do we do with that information once we do it? And everyone goes, I don't know. Then what's the value of it?
Exactly. And how many times have we seen a PM check motor or check the belt?
Check what?
What we check in. Like, we have to be able to have a metric to measure against a certain tolerance or something. Otherwise, what is the point in it?
Yep. And there's a whole structure that we can go into. But, like, some little bits to kind of start with without going into the full process is, obviously, you know, any PMs that is some form of preventative maintenance, so change this just because we're saying we have to, they're a great place to start to review, especially if you've already got some form of condition monitoring program on them.
Well, that's what we kind of find, because when we come into a organization that doesn't have any condition monitoring, we kind of set up our own kind of route and we start to look at that. Because generally, a lot of the time, that's where we first kind of come into a company where they have got a gap, they don't know how to do it. And that is one area we can quite quickly implement very quickly and identify, you know, defects and assets within even the first survey, really, essentially, with the technology that we have. But when we start to progress that and we're actually monitoring a lot of these critical assets, when we start to cross-reference the PMs that are actually in place on some of these things, we're doing high-end vibration analysis on some of this stuff. And we've got thermal cameras, we've got ultrasound guns. We're literally, when we do condition monitoring, we're using all of these technologies, if I'm honest, when we go around to these assets. But they might still have a PM in place to go check the temperature on the bearing when we're already doing you know, and that time it takes for that guy to be going around to do this, that could be well better spent somewhere else in terms of doing some proactive stuff on the site where we're not there doing this. So the idea is utilizing your men where they can be highly effective rather than using them for condition monitoring techniques where we are actually on site and we're doing a lot of these other things as well, you know.
You think, I mean, it doesn't happen, let's say, regularly, but it happens enough to that I remember it. The amount of times that we'll go to a potential customer that we've been working with for a number of months now, we've been monitoring a particular asset for, let's say, 6 months. It's all green in the vibration data. There's no cause for concern. And then you turn up next month and it's a brand new asset. You're like,
okay,
why was that changed? And then you go speak with the engineer and he's like, oh, PM came up, told us to change it.
I know, but the thing is, you know, how are we not, though, contesting these PMs and asking the question of, like, you know,
that, but
you know, we've got to be asking
that's
the question.
The next thing, which we've is looking at, you know, when these things happen, it's about looking at, okay, so why was it changed? Why is the PM still in place? What's the culture behind doing so? And it's about, we have the knowledge about condition monitoring and we know that we're testing that asset. So we can go and speak to those senior people within the business and say, look, actually, this PM is actually going to give you less reliability.
Yeah, exactly, because you're actually maybe now inducing failures. Yeah. And we've seen it before where, especially when poor quality motors are used, and this is something that I think the industry has a big problem with at the minute currently, and it's usually down to the fact that a lot of purchasing, you know, purchasing is kind of separate from engineering. And a lot of this time is where reliability is not a metric for that purchasing process, is that a lot of these cheaper model motors are actually getting integrated within the plant. When that happens, though, you know, the idea is that the reliability is actually getting reduced, because when that actually does happen, you're now looking at an asset that's less reliable than the one that you've potentially replaced. And that's a big problem for sustainability, reliability, and all these different factors. So again, that's another discussion in terms of, you know, bringing everything together. But I think the last subject that we're going to go on to now is, how does condition-based maintenance play into all of this? We've kind of covered that a little bit within the last section, but go into a bit more detail with how the condition-based maintenance needs to now kind of be implemented to actually give them cost savings as well in terms of that availability for the people.
It falls into kind of like both these avenues now. Like, how does actually reviewing my PMs benefit me? And how does maybe a condition-based maintenance plan also affect into that? So if you have got PMs that are check this, check that, we have to really sit down and ask ourselves, again, what value are those adding? And are they actually giving us useful information on the condition of the asset?
Yeah.
It's pretty much now, I think, recognized most places that if a asset has a failure mode that is random, which most bearing defects, gear faults, which are probably the most concerning really are, they are random in nature, and therefore doing a preventative maintenance type strategy is a bad idea.
It is, because, right? Yeah,
100%. So we recognize that's pretty much the case. So condition-based maintenance is the way forward. And therefore, if you do, if you are currently in that stage where you don't quite yet have a condition-based maintenance plan and you are quite reactive and you've got preventative maintenance, what you're actually doing is wasting a lot of time and resources.
Oh, massively. Yeah.
You're over-maintaining. You're putting a lot of time and hours into doing things that aren't necessary. You're doing a lot of excessive maintenance that is going to reduce the reliability. All these things are areas of optimization where what you might be able to do is either start a condition-based maintenance strategy or start a condition monitoring program with the help of another team or whoever or in-house. And you can start then looking at a lot of these preventative maintenance strategies you've got in place and going, well, we've ascertained that that actually is not necessary. And what you're doing is, A, you're improving the amount of labor you've got available. You're reducing the amount of money you're having to spend. You're not having to buy assets just for the sake of it.
But the problem is as well, and not even that, you're actually starting to hit some actual percentages and targets. How many sites we go to, they're like, oh, you know, we've completed 40% PMs or 60% PMs and we're getting hammered for it. But the idea is, you know, a lot of the time these KPIs are built upon things that are probably not effective. Yeah. But the problem of that is as well, when you have a KPI, you're going to, you know, you're being measured against something and people within the business are going to ask questions of why that percentage is low. So the idea is that it's insanity that you're trying to hit a high percentage on something that has no value. That is complete insanity.
Yeah.
You've got to start optimizing that now. Yeah. So when you do get to a place of what is actually achievable, which a lot of the time, a lot of PMs are not achievable because you look at how many PMs are in certain sites because they've not been optimized in years. There's just hundreds of them yeah. that add no value.
And they just sit there. They come up and ready to just, be done. Yeah, and then they get closed because they never get done.
And they never get done. And then your KPIs and your percentage completions are always low. And you're always going to fail when you've got unrealistic numbers. But then the whole insanity idea of this is that the fact that even if you completed 100% of it, it's still not adding the value because they're not optimized. So this is a place where people need to start now.
Yeah, because optimizing your PMs and looking at your PM structure is not a one and done thing. It's something that is continuously improving.
Yeah, 100%.
So when we look at our PMs, and we've obviously talked about the preventative maintenance ones, but we're also going to have some PMs that are going to be like, we need to check that conveyor every 6 months to make sure that the belt isn't teared
exactly,
or whatever.
Because again, you know, we have to understand as well, me and Will know this because we've experienced it, that condition-based maintenance is not always the way forward for everything.
No, because that's a great example.
You know, we've had failures, and I'm going to be completely honest, in between surveys where something has happened that condition-based maintenance has not been able to detect.
Yep.
So, but then it's a case of looking at back at the PMs and then refining it and say, like, okay, let's learn from these mistakes. What actually happened? Doing a proper root cause analysis.
Is that failure mode random?
Is it random? Is it something that we can
detect?
And is it something that can be put into place to be found in the future?
Yeah.
And if it can't, then we've got to be able to mitigate that risk.
You're going to have in your plant some things. Conveyor belt is a great example. You're not necessarily, the detectability using condition monitoring to detect if the belt is got a crack in it is quite tricky to do.
It is. It's not an easy thing, is it? And it's not something that you can put a sensor on and quickly ascertain.
No. And when we look at doing our reliability studies, we would look at that particular failure mode, the belt snapping, as being quite poor for detectability condition monitoring. So we need to do some form of an interval check on it.
Exactly.
It's important, though, that we define within that PM, what are we looking for? Not just check the belt.
100%. And again, you know, I always talk about reliability and how we do it. It's a process where in an ideal world, it would be great to be able to do the first steps first and do the proper audits and criticality things. But we know we live in the real world where that is not done. You know, a lot of people start in different places and different avenues.
Especially when you've got a lot of places that, like, the regular ones, when we are like, we need to do the criticality, we need to do the asset. Oh, we just don't have the time. Why don't you have the time? Because you're running
reactive.
Around
exactly.
doing PMs that aren't necessary and reacting.
And it's just such a weird cycle that we, you know, we have quite simple solutions to break out of it, but the awareness needs to be there and the money needs to be available for this because a lot of the time in discussions when we are discussing quotes and we're like, right, this is what's going to be able to get more time, they don't see, they're just so caught up in what they're doing on the day-to-day basis and they're still trying to get the plant running and use that budget essentially to be able to spend it on that. They don't have the funds available for the other thing. So it's about, it's a bit of a catch 22 situation, got to get out of it. There's got to be a break in the chain at some
point. Breaking out of the reactive maintenance cycle of doom, podcast number two.
Number two, exactly. We're going to do this. But as well, another thing that I was going to, touch on as well. This is the reason why criticality studies are so important as well. Because when we are talking about PM optimization, where do you focus on? Because we talked about there, a bell, right? And for example, condition monitoring, for example, might be able to detect two or three failure modes on that and probably quite risky ones like motor failing, gearbox failing, bearings failing, that type of thing. But belt tracking and that type of thing, not necessarily. So the idea is once you've done your criticality study and you've understand your real key components that are critical, then you do your FAMICAs on these things to identify them areas that you can't detect from condition monitoring. Then you put them into plan maintenance as well, into checks. Yep. But again, you've got to have the time for them guys to do them checks. And if they're doing PMs that are not valuable on things that are not critical, which we've seen as well.
And I think
you've got guys checking things that you can potentially run to failure, and you've got them spending time, wasting time. And even us, we're doing condition monitoring. We're like, well, do we need to be doing this on this?
I think sometimes there has to be a want within the business to want to change. There has to be a want to improve reliability. And sometimes that means that there is an upfront cost to that.
Massively.
If you don't necessarily have the resources and times to dedicate to it, you're just going to forever stay in that position.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. It's not frustrating for us because we understand how this game works. Breaking out of that culture cycle, because it's quite cultural and systematic as well in terms of history and how things have been on certain places. Sometimes even when you get an engineering manager that comes in with new, fresh ideas, it's not easy for them to be able to change it around overnight because there's this ingrained culture that needs to change with it. So what we're trying to do as this podcast, as, maintain reliability,
raise
awareness, have these discussions, put these videos out on LinkedIn, because we are very passionate about just being able to raise enough awareness around these subjects. And, for us, it's beautiful when we actually are able to improve reliability. But there's even some plants that we're working with now. We understand where they are on their journey. And it's going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We have to be patient. And we are impatient people. We have to learn to be patient because we can't, even us and our passion and our energy, walk into an organization and change it overnight.
No.
Because the change just has to happen within the culture, within the company
and
as well.
It all forms under that change management philosophy. And when we go in and we're working with a company that want to improve their reliability, it is a journey, not a jump. And it's us working with them to understand where their culture currently is and where it needs to go.
But there's so many elements, yeah.
What this kind of, this reliability drive within like the UK where we are currently based at the minute, we obviously are, the podcast allows us to kind of infect that culture a lot wider and start, you may be an engineer manager or someone that might listen to this and then start getting your gears kind of tearing up.
Okay,
yeah. How do I start?
Or you might be an engineer or a shift leader. And I think the beautiful thing I love about engineering and the community that we're in, everyone loves their job and they care. So the idea is sometimes is like you might be kind of, maybe engineer and you might be thinking, well, why are things done this way? Why can't we be more
problem
proactive?
Solvers.
We want to make things better as engineers. And I totally understand that. So guys, if you have, if you're engineer manager, you're engineer and shift supervisor, and you want us to come in, even have just initial chat. Like we're here just to be able to see where you are and see how we can effectively make your life a little bit easier and improve that reliability.
We're a support function, and that doesn't mean we have to be the one that come in and does it. We can just be there to offer advice and support. 100%.
And whatever you want it to be in terms of our involvement, we're happy to do that. And that's the thing about what we are. We're never here to say, oh, we can do this, we can do that. We have a look at every element of what you're in terms of culture, where you're at in terms of maintenance. And there's something that we can definitely offer, but we can, start it slow. We can start it quick. It all depends on what you want out of the scenario. But what we're looking for is just initial chats. Let's just have a conversation. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm sure somewhere you know, Mine and Will's passion can be integrated with our knowledge, with reliability and condition monitoring and all these things that we've got, and the workshop now in precision maintenance is somewhere that we can potentially help. So let's just have a discussion. Let's just have a chat, and we're more than happy to come over, no charge, just have a discussion, see where it can go. But anyway, guys, thank you for tuning in for the first podcast. We're going to try to roll these weekly. We're up for the challenge, mate, aren't we? Let's get it, baby. Let's get it. So thank you for tuning in, guys. Take care, and we'll see you on next week's podcast.